Honor your father and your mother, even when they are dishonorable? That's a question we want to address today in Probe. My name is Alden Thompson. Welcome to Probe. We are continuing our discussions this week on religion in relationships, and in fact, we're talking about the fifth command, honor your father and your mother. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology, and Aline Bauer, Visiting Instructor in Theology. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So let's get started with a question. Honor your father and your mother. What do you think is the primary application of that particular command? What did God have in mind when he inscribed that in the tables of stone? Big people, little people, good people, bad people?
Well, I think it certainly encompasses more than just little children obeying their mom and dad during their growing up years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that probably the most basic meaning of this is to recognize the order of the universe, if I can put it that way, the way that God created parents to give birth to children and to be responsible for them, to recognize the institution of parenthood, and by extension to recognize the value and the contribution and the wisdom of elders.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we look at the developing family of parents who have children, at some point those children are ready to step back from their parental relationships. They shall leave their father and their mother, cleave unto a spouse, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, and we could ask about this back there, but let's talk about today, what happens today if parents refuse to let loose?
Well, then usually the spouse has to write a letter to Dear Abby. We see a lot of that, I think,
and
that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Or the other thing can happen, too, and the child isn't willing to let go. So it can be a coin of both sides.
Yeah, I think from a biblical context that this thing that is sometimes called severance is very, very important. And I think that the whole role of parenting or of growing up, whichever way you want to look at it, involves severance. So you think about what parents begin with. They begin with a little infant that can do very little for itself. And so, you know, as a parent, you invest time and effort and love and resources in the care and the nurturing of that little child. But you don't want to keep the child that way. You know, if your child was 35 and was needed your care like an infant does, you would be very displeased, feeling like something had gone very wrong, radically wrong. So, you know, I think part of the process of honoring your parents is the task of growing up and becoming, self-sufficient, no longer dependent on them.
I think of Ellen White's statement, and of course she's very important in our own Adventist heritage, where she says children should be cast upon their own judgment as fast and as far as is practicable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing statement. You know, get them out there, get them independent, then you can counsel as human beings, not in an authority relationship.
Yeah, because the interesting thing is that For a significant period of life, you are, in a sense, peers with your parents, in that you are both fully functioning adults. Now, I don't think you ever become peers in that that you see each other as, it's two different generations, but both of you are functioning adults who have opinions and have jurisdictions of your own and have to be respectful of those. And then I think as time goes by and the decline of aging sets in, that then the dynamic changes again.
And you might say that when parents go into their second childhood, then the children have to assume a larger responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the greatest challenge in our age.
Yeah, and so I think this honoring of one's parents is different things in different seasons of life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting that the terms that often go along are honoring and obeying. And I would, how do you see those two?
Well, let's talk about that word obey. And I even raised the question as to whether there's such a thing as thoughtful obedience as over against blind obedience. Mm-hmm. Thoughtful obedience means that you think it through before you automatically respond.
And what age can you start doing that?
Now, that's a good question. Does that depend on the children?
Could be.
I remember at least one of our two daughters, she was very independent very early. And it was dangerous for me to counteract her with too much vigor and enthusiasm. And I think one has to make allowances for the differences in children.
That's why parents pray for wisdom, I think,
because
of those very differences.
But, you know, this issue is one I think that people live with in a very practical way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I agree that it varies person to person, that there are some individuals who it seems like they never reach full responsibility, where there are others who can take it. But I also think there's an element here where you have to link responsibility and consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you learn responsibility without also learning the issue of consequence.
Now, when you raise that question of consequence, Dave, that brings up another difficult challenge, and it's only loosely linked, but it's one that I think we must talk about. What happens if one's parents are not honorable people? What are the consequences of that in terms of the parent-child relationship?
Or if they are honorable people for the most part, but they're involved in something that is dishonorable. See, I think that creates a huge complication, and I think it's the distance between the ideal and the actual that produces the agony and the pain in life. In other words, if there's an ideal and we fail to achieve that ideal, then the distance, and the further the distance between those, the more the tragedy. And so when people start acting dishonorably, they create a legacy of distress and trouble, and really oftentimes put their children, or their parents, if the children are the one doing it, put them in a situation where they are confronted by two evils instead of a good. And
yep.
I think all of us have lived long enough to know that a choice between evils is bad news whichever way you have to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I remember the tussle that I went through when my parents were aging and their eyesight was deteriorating.
Mm.
And they really shouldn't have been driving. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad told me privately, your mother really shouldn't be driving. My mother told me privately, your dad shouldn't be driving.
Oh, no.
I finally got them together and said, now, what do you suppose this means? But it was almost impossible for me to consider the place, all right, give me your driver's license, it's all over. That was incredibly difficult. Now, when the accident that took their life and their eyesight was apparently not involved, my dad probably fell asleep. But that was my very first question when I heard the voice on the phone. Was anyone else involved?
Mm-hmm.
It would have been incredibly difficult for me if, because of my failure to act, their eyesight had led to the loss of someone else.
But it's very hard as a child to have to reverse those roles and do that for our parents.
Yeah, I know a man who had to go and take his father's keys away from him so he couldn't drive anymore. It was a heart-rending thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one could hope that as life progresses that we are more gracious to one another than to you know, put those things in there. But, you know, Alden, you raised a question about obedience, and I don't think we really talked about it. That I think we have to be careful about obedience because I don't see it portrayed in the Bible as a mindless thing. Obedience is a thought, is something that's driven by thought, and is driven by principles. And you know, to be mindlessly obedient is a very dangerous thing because people come and ask you to do dishonorable things or illegal or immoral things, and if they happen to be in a position of authority over you in one way or another, wow.
Yeah. And one of the amazing things about the prophets, the true prophets, especially during the period of the monarchy, is that they were not afraid to disobey the king.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had Ahab, for example, would have his 400 prophets that would come in and tell him what he wanted to hear. But Micaiah, yeah, he told the truth. Or Elijah coming in to see Ahab and saying, you know, you're doing wrong, and Yahweh's going to turn off the faucet. You know, see, that requires incredible moral strength to disobey the structure of the community.
Yeah, but doesn't that relate directly to some circumstances in life? Don't you think there are times when we have to, in order to honor the truth of God, we have to, I hate to say dishonor, but certainly disobey our parents and tell them, I'm sorry, but you are asking me to do something that I cannot in good conscience do, and therefore I refuse.
That's right.
Well, and I think that's another reason last week we talked about the Decalogue, and God comes first, and then the fifth commandment, parents. And that applies to this, I think, too, that there is a command to God and honoring and obeying God that would even come above honoring, I mean, parents. Mm-hmm. But I would say that you could honor even if you don't obey.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And maybe honoring is doing what's best for the other individual.
Yeah.
And in God's sight as well.
Yeah. And the good thing about obeying God is that he never asks us to do those things.
That's right. Mm.
See? That's comforting,
he
isn't it?
He doesn't ask us to do dishonorable things.
Right.
But he does ask us to make hard decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
we
does.
Always have to ask that question of what is the best thing to do here, what is best honors God.
Mm-hmm.
And which, by the way, lends some real interesting dynamics to the story of Abraham and Mount Moriah, where he was asked to sacrifice his son, because I've often wondered how I would have, you know, how do you react to a circumstance where God is apparently asking you to do something that he has forbidden? Ooh, that's a terrible conundrum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of discussion on that chapter.
There's one other story that I want to tuck in here before the clock gets away from us, and that is the story of Jacob, who responded to his mother's wishes, and in so doing dishonored his father. Now, talk about a tangle. How do you honor your parents in such a situation?
Well, first of all, I think we need to go forward a couple weeks when we'll talk about marriage, because I think there was a little problem with the marriage here going on. And this resulted with the, you know, division of the children.
Mm-hmm. But I think that in this case, poor Jacob is put in a real predicament, because, you know, who of us could vote against mother or choose to go against mother and... You know, but she was actually choosing to do something that was dishonorable and wanted him to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is the root cause of this problem. You know, the poor man was in a position where he was going to dishonor one of his parents or the other. It's too bad he chose to honor the one who was being dishonorable, but anyway. And the legacy of that went on for quite a while, if you remember.
Well, I think that's what's important to remember here, too. The cycle tends to go on.
Mm. And, of course... In this case, it was complicated by the fact that Jacob was his mother's favorite, and Esau was his father's favorite. So, coming back to the question of Genesis 22 and the sacrifice on the mountain, Dave, I think it may have been a little less complex because child sacrifice was probably pretty well known.
Yeah, I think it was well known, but was it not forbidden?
Later it was, but I don't think it would be in the same category as murder.
Oh, okay.
So that would make it a little bit easier, because you do have some sanction of different kinds of killing. But still, within the family relationships, that would be incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And especially when you have cross-cultural situations, you have things that come up, and you have to make a decision that might be right in one culture.
Yeah, perhaps the more interesting commentary is that Isaac was willing to go along with it.
Yeah, he was. And there's no evidence in the text that he quarreled with his father. Well, I want to thank you, Aline and Dave, for helping us today. Next week, they will be with us again, and our topic for next week is Parenthood, Joys and Responsibilities. I hope you can join us again. My thanks to Jeremy Erland, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.